This episode of The Bull Show is brought to you by the Chicago Stats League. The Chicago Stats League puts together awesome recreational basketball leagues with full stat tracking for adults across the city of Chicago. Our next league begins on Saturday, August 17th, 2013 at Hamlin Park on the city's north side and runs for 10 weeks. Along with full stat tracking, enjoy an experience unlike any other rec league in the city. The league includes individual and team stat tracking, game recaps, league leaders, individual player pages, box scores, IHSA refs, a postseason with postseason awards, and exclusive post-game bar specials brought to you by the Pony Bar. Registration for the league begins next week on the website at ChicagoStatsLeague.com. For more details, email us at ChicagoStatsLeague@gmail.com. The Chicago Stats League, your rec league is under new management. Episode number 46 of the Mitch and Neil's Bull Show. You're looking at the Chicago Bulls from a fan perspective. We're not experts. We're not insiders. We're not journalists, but we are two guys that love talking about the Chicago Bulls.
We're back.
My name is Mitch, the man you just heard very creepily. It's the boy Jay Nils. Nils, talk to the people.
You see, Mitch, there are leaders and there are followers, but I'd rather be a Nils than a swallower.
Words to live by from Jay Nils.
Jesus.
What's up, man?
Not much. We're recording our first episode in over a month, and a lot has gone down since then.
Yeah, the streets have been begging for a Bull Show podcast. Literally, have they? Every single day, yeah. On the streets, at work, at the gym.
I don't know what street you're driving down or walking across, but that's news to me. But since we last recorded, the Miami Heat repeating as 2013 NBA champs. Your quick thoughts?
It looked like the Spurs had them game six. I mean, it's so funny to me how different this whole story would be with just one missed shot, you know?
Right.
You know, if LeBron James misses that three, mm-hmm. In game six, I think his legacy is forever changed. I think the Heat's reign or not being reigned is forever changed. Just one shot. He goes from zero to hero.
Multiple one shots. You know, you mentioned LeBron's three-pointer. You could say Ray Allen's three-pointer. You could say Kawhi Leonard and Manu Ginobili's missed free throws. I mean, there were so many. You know, you hear about football being a game of inches. And same could be said about basketball. And it was very disappointing, surprisingly disappointing and stressful from my perspective, not having really a horse in the race and being so devastated that the Spurs lost in the Heat.
Well, I think you did have a horse in the race. I think most Bulls fans truly, truly hate the Miami Heat. They just hate them. And, I mean, hate is just as strong as love.
Sports hate.
Yeah, I don't hate like Chris Anderson. Like, I'm not going to fight Chris Anderson. I don't have problems with Joel Anthony. But, sports hate.
So what else have you been up to aside from being devastated or disappointed by the Spurs losing to the
Heat? Listen, I've been getting my hockey on, man.
Yeah, you're we're puckheads.
Yeah.
Right? Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Because it's the cup.
Listen, just because we're minorities doesn't mean that we can't enjoy a little hockey.
One win away.
That's right.
One win away. Can you name five players on the Blackhawks?
I can name most of the players on the Blackhawks.
Well,
when I jump into something,
yeah,
I go hard.
Well, it's one thing to reel off their names. It's another thing to actually pronounce them correctly.
Yeah,
could you do that?
Yes. Yeah? Taze.
Are you sure it's not Toes?
No, it's Taze.
Okay.
Hosa.
There you go.
Kane.
You're on fire. I mean, we can spend the rest of this episode talking about the Blackhawks.
Basically. Those are all the easy ones, though.
But this is not the Blackhawks show. But with that being said, one win away from the Stanley Cup. And for Bulls fans, you know, let's remember, winning is contagious between us and our United Center roommates. Let's not forget in 2010 after the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup. That was followed by the Bulls' most successful season since Jordan was in the Bulls uniform. So hopefully we get a Blackhawks win tomorrow night, and hopefully that that trend continues with the Bulls in 2013-2014. What else has been going on?
That's about it.
Man, your life sounds so empty.
No, it's not empty. It's actually been pretty stressful. I mean, you know, you got the NBA game, right? And then you got the hockey game.
Yeah.
And you got the NBA game. And you got the hockey game.
Right.
It was a lot of sports. We had the Confederations Cup and soccer. You know, I get my soccer on.
I don't know what that is. But regardless, look, we're back.
We're back.
And we're bringing a special guest with us.
Casey Johnson, the insider of all insiders. Been in the Bulls beat writing game for years and years and years.
Seasoned veteran.
Seasoned vet. I don't know how you tricked him into coming on the show.
Yeah, you know, actually,
are you just paying people at this point? are we just like shelling out dollars?
I don't got those kind of racks. but I actually ran into Casey Johnson at a Phil Jackson event. Phil Jackson was in town.
Could you just rub shoulders with like media elites? Basically?
No, I'm basically the biggest fanboy and just try and attend all these events as a member of the common folk, mm-hmm. not so much the media. But maybe one of these days we'll fire up those media credentials. We'll be worthy enough to receive them. But no, I ran into Casey Johnson, told him I was a big fan of his work, and sure enough, he was nice enough to come on.
All right, well, let's get into a Casey Johnson interview. This interview is about 30 minutes long. After the interview, please be sure to stick around. We're going to do a little recap, 5 or 10 minutes, talk about what's going on with that interview, what our thoughts are. And with no further ado,
real quick, before we get into it.
What's up?
We haven't done this in so long that I forgot to plug our partners, websites. Blogable.com, ShySeeSports.com, GoWhereHipHop.com, and BullsPodcasters.com. Make sure you check out those sites. Check out our work. We'll be posting this episode and, of course, all future episodes there. And make sure you follow us at The Bulls Show and at Mitch Don't Lie.
That's right. All right, let's get into it.
Bulls Show. YMCMB Ross doing it. School for the blind. I don't see these doing it. I'm doing it and doing it and doing it well. All right, welcome back to the Mitch and Nils Bulls Show. We are honored to have on the line Chicago Bulls beat reporter at the Chicago Tribune for over the last 15 years, dating back to the 1996 season. He's seen it all. Casey Johnson, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. You know, we'll start with what I'm sure a lot of Bulls fans are dying to know right now, and that is, how exactly is Casey Johnson spending his offseason?
Well, I'm sure that'll bore your listeners into submission, but usually from the period when they get eliminated in the playoffs to the draft, I try to reacquaint myself with my sons and my family.
this is a welcome period for you.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But this week we'll obviously gear up for the draft and then into free agency and summer league. So the busy period starts again. And it's, you know, been a nice little break. Watched the finals, obviously fantastic finals. I remain one of the few LeBron fans out there and always have been. So I thought he had a spectacular performance throughout these finals.
No doubt. We just witnessed, like you said, a very entertaining NBA finals. Basketball played at its highest level, in my opinion. And even though I'm sure plenty of Bulls fans are disappointed even, or at least annoyed that the Heat repeated as champs, I wanted to ask, you know, based on what we saw during these games, even to a certain extent what we saw during the Eastern Conference Finals with the emergence of the Pacers, how do you see these past playoffs impacting the Bulls management's plans or approach this offseason, if at all?
Well, I mean, I don't think they're going to impact them much because obviously you've got, you know, a certain former league MVP returning, and that's the biggest story of this Bulls offseason is, you know, Derek's going to be back next season. Everybody assumes he's going to return at a high level. He obviously needs to prove that, but it's hard to judge this Bulls team because, you know, they have not stayed healthy over the last two seasons. And even in that one season where they went to the conference finals against the Heat, I mean, obviously the Heat were the better team, but the Bulls also lost Omer Asik late in that series. I'm not saying that would have made a huge difference, but it's been hard to completely judge. I mean, you could definitely look at these playoffs and say if you return the core of Rose, Deng, Noah, Boozer, and so in those around that core with some, you know, decent pieces in free agency, that the Bulls have as good a shot as anybody to come out of the East if they can stay healthy. But they just haven't proven they've been able to stay healthy. So I do think, and I'm just guessing here, but I do think that the management is going to return the core of those four players and take their best shot next season because, I mean, as good as the Heat is, and you can't knock a back-to-back titleist, I don't think they're, you know, the best team in NBA history. So I certainly think the Bulls have a chance to come out of the East if they stay healthy.
So you think that it's the management's perception that the gap between the Heat and the Bulls isn't so great that it's something worth blowing up, that the Bulls can really compete for an NBA championship with this core?
Well, the other thing is, you can't, even if you try to blow it up this summer, what can you do? So, I mean, obviously everyone has looked ahead and seen that the summer of 2014 is the chance that they're going to have some flexibility if they choose to go that route. So, I mean, you know, if you want to blow it up this summer, I don't see what move you make. I mean, I suppose people have said, you know, trade Dang, but, you know, he's a two-time All-Star. And also, I don't think there's as much interest in Dang this summer as there might have been even last summer, because he's an expiring, and you know, there's no guarantee that he would resign with a team if he got traded to that team. So I think this is again my guess. I haven't talked to really anybody in management over the last couple of weeks, but my guess is that, you know, if you return the core of those four guys, you've got a chance to come out of the East. I'm not saying that they think that they're as good as Miami, but the Bulls have played Miami fairly competitively over, at least in regular season play over the last few seasons. So I think it'd be smart to return that core and take your best shot.
Right, and when you look at the Bulls roster right now as it stands, you know, there's pretty much eight, maybe nine players locked in with contracts. And, of course, I'm excluding potential Rip Hamilton buyout. But with that being said, you know, there's still about three or four roster spots remaining. Obviously, the Bulls are hard-capped going into the offseason, don't have that much flexibility with the salary cap. But who do you see as potential free agent targets given the constraints that we have?
Well, it's going to be all minimum guys. I mean, I'd be even surprised if they use that that taxpayer mid-level that they're going to have. I mean, I suppose they could, but I'd be surprised because, as you mentioned, they've got eight guys locked in, and I'm assuming Nazi is going to be back, which is going to be nine. And then if they use the pick at 20, that's 10. So you're talking about adding three minimum level guys. I know that doesn't probably inspire great thoughts throughout the fandom, but you know, they did do pretty fairly well last year with some minimum guys. And obviously Nazi was a contributor, and then Nate was a whole another story that, you know, obviously wrote itself and ended up being a huge home run for what they paid for him.
So you're breaking the news that the Bulls are not getting Dwight Howard or Andre Iguodala this offseason. You heard it here first on the Bulls show.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, you know, those eight guys that are locked in, that they're over the projected tax line with those eight guys. So they'll have that taxpayer mid-level of just over $3 million available, and I suppose they could surprise me and use all of it. You know, given that they're already going to be a tax team, I don't see them wanting to go deep into tax because it's going to be their second season in a row in the tax. So, you know, there is that Korver trade exception hanging out there. I'm not saying that they're going to use it, but maybe you could get a slightly over the minimum level guy for a draft pick and take him into that Korver trade exception. That's a possibility, but I think you're going to see a similar to last summer, where you're basically, actually it's going to be even less of an impact last summer, because obviously last summer they got Heinrich and Bellinelli with two of the exceptions. So I think you're going to see mostly veteran minimum exceptions this summer.
Well, for some of our fans that aren't as cap savvy as the others, when you talked about the Kyle Korver trade exception, could you educate the fans on what that is?
Well, when they traded Korver last year, they basically got an exception that allows you to take salary into that slot. It lasts up to a year, and you can take salary into that slot, you know, and not have the trade, not have the salaries equal when you trade out. So, like, you could maybe throw a draft pick at somebody and take somebody off, you know. I'm just throwing out a player. I mean, you could just trade a draft pick to somebody and get some player that's available, and his salary, as long as under $5 million, could fit into that exception.
I got you.
So that would be one thing that, you know, is available to them. But again, I keep coming back to this. I mean, anybody can do the numbers. You got eight guys that take you over the projected tax line. So given that they're going to be a back-to-back tax team in consecutive years, I don't see them going much deeper into the tax. So I think that's why they're going to be fairly prudent when they do their free agency plans this summer.
Now, one of the guys that aren't in that plan of eight or nine guys coming back is Nate Robinson. He clearly had a big impact this season, hitting tons of big shots in the playoffs and really providing an offense spark for the team without Derrick Rose. There have been rumors that Nate Robinson may not be coming back to the team because of salary cap issues. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think that he is going to probably get more on the open market than what the Bulls are willing to pay. I assume, and I haven't confirmed this yet, but I assume the Bulls will call his agent and say, we'd love to have him back at the minimum. But I also assume that he's going to get more than the minimum. He was a big success story last year. I mean, you know, obviously everyone knows his contract was non-guaranteed through until January. And you got to give him credit. He took the opportunity and ran with it. I mean, he has changed addresses a lot throughout his NBA career because he, you know, can sometimes wear out coaches or teammates with his nonstop chatter and his shot selection, et cetera. But you got to give the guy credit. He came up big at big moments last year. I think he is maturing as a player. His floor game is also, I think, gotten a little bit better. And he hit a ton of big shots. Plus, here's the thing. We all know it. I mean, he hit tons of big shots in the playoffs, and that's where you get, obviously, your most attention. So I assume – and there's a ton of teams with cap space this summer, so I assume you're going to have some, you know, team that just throws a decent number at him, probably a 2 or 3 year deal, I would guess, guaranteed. And I also assume he'll take that. I mean, I'm just throwing this out there, but I've already seen one story where, you know, his agent was quoted as he'd love to go back to the Knicks. I mean, I think that's already proactive planning there. I mean, the Knicks don't have cap space, but they like making splashes, so I can see them maybe throwing a part of the mid-level at him, if not all the mid-level, and try to make a big splash with a known commodity to Knicks fans. That's just one guess.
Now, Nate Robinson is known as kind of a free spirit. Tom Thibodeau, more of a stern kind of coach. How did that relationship work? It didn't seem to like it would be as successful on paper, but obviously it worked out well for the Bulls.
Well, no, you just nailed it. I mean, they're very different personalities. Tom, you know, was quoted consistently as saying, you know, he knew what he was getting in Nate because he'd obviously had him briefly in Boston. So, and I do think Nate has matured. Like I said before, I think Nate's matured as a player. I think Tom's seen some of that maturation. But, I mean, let's face it, they're two very different people. And I thought it was very telling at times when Nate, I'm thinking more back to the regular season now, because by the playoffs, I mean, Nate was arguably one of their best players given all their injuries. But I'm thinking back to the regular season, Nate would have a fairly big game, and we'd ask Tom about Nate, and it fairly consistently he'd give very short, clipped answers. So I don't think Tom was I don't want to call him not a fan, but I mean, it's clear they're just different personalities. So and Tom always wanted him to play better defense, but you know he wants everybody to play better defense. So, but hey, it worked out. I mean, the Bulls don't get to where they get to without Nate. I mean, you have to be a blind guy to see the impact that he had in the playoffs. And that performance against the Nets remains one of the most remarkable performances I've ever seen. And I've covered a lot of games, so that hats off to that guy. He took the opportunity and ran with it.
Definitely. You know, speaking of Tibbs, and you mentioned earlier on that historically, at least in the past 2-3 seasons, the Bulls' main issue has been health. And with that being said, especially with the Spurs and Heat among the teams most recognized, in my opinion, for resting their players during the season, do you think Tibbs changes it up at all based on what we saw from the finals and, you know, who the last teams that were standing? Particularly with minutes.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, he's been pretty consistent with what he's done. I actually heard him on the radio recently, and he said that, you know, Noah's been hurt when he's played high minutes or low minutes. So, and also the thing that he always points to, and he's right in this, is that, you know, Deng and Noah averaged high minutes per game, but if you look at their overall minutes, now this is kind of you could flip this argument to go against them. But when you look at their overall minutes, they don't rank high, but that's obviously because they spent time being injured. So I guess it's a, you know, catch 22. I mean, I think Tom's been pretty consistent that he's going to play his core players heavy minutes. I do think Deng, for the most part, has proven he can handle it. I know Deng's shooting percentage declined throughout the season. But if you look back to Tom's first season with the Bulls, you know, Deng's minutes increased dramatically, and I mean, he's become a two-time All-Star under Tom Thibodeau. I mean, now, there's no disputing that.
Yeah, do you think Deng's drop-off in production was more attributable to the minutes that he was playing, the injury, or even perhaps, you know, not playing with Derrick Rose, who obviously does create a lot of solid opportunities for his teammates?
Well, I'll take the lame route here and say a combination of the above. I mean, obviously Rose makes everybody on the court better. I mean, and that's going to be the big return next year. Is not only is Rose a great scorer, but he just makes the game easier for everybody. That's what stars do. So, you know, Deng obviously is not a shot creator. I think, you know, partly that, partly he was, you know, banged up throughout the year. And then I do think this year, maybe it was a cumulative effect of three straight seasons of playing heavy minutes. I do think this year I probably did see him a bit more fatigued than I had in years past. I've definitely leaned more towards Thibodeau in this minutes argument. I know a lot of people rail on him about it. I've always leaned towards him. I mean, he's right. I mean, you look at historically, I mean, Tim Duncan used to play 40 minutes a game, okay? I mean, that's just what stars doing or your core guys doing this league. So can there be some times where, you know, they're up 8, 10, 12, 14 with 3 minutes to go? Could he get them out? Yeah, but, you know, Tom's pretty consistent with he's going to ride his guys to the end.
What's the status of Luol Deng's wrist?
His wrist?
Yeah.
To me, it's a non-story. I mean, he's okay. Let's look at it. He's played. He's finished one season and made an All-Star team. He's played in the playoffs. I mean, I'm sorry, the Olympics. And now he's played an entire season and made an All-Star team. I don't even ask about it anymore or think about it. I mean, he's not having surgery this summer. It's a, you know, he's proven he played through that injury, and all credit to him. I mean, that guy, you know, for all the question marks about, you know, back to that stress fracture in his tibia or whatever, that he's not a tough guy. I mean, come on. I hope those questions and that argument is dead now, because this guy's basically played through everything you can ask of that guy.
Is the wrist something that's been healed, or is it something that he's just kind of gotten used to playing through?
Well, what I was told and what I originally reported was that it is a kind of injury that you can either opt for surgery to correct it, or eventually it's going to basically build up enough scar tissue to heal itself. And so, I mean, it's not like he's playing with a torn ligament. I mean, I assume that the ligament is basically healed itself at this point, and there's enough scar tissue around it. I mean, it's a non-issue as far as he's concerned. I mean, he's been whacked on it millions of times. I mean, he basically barely has that, you know, he barely has a wrap on it anymore. He's got that tape on it a little bit. So he's played a season and a half in an Olympics with it, and he's been a two-time All-Star and played, you know, heavy minutes for Great Britain in London last summer. So I don't even think it's a story anymore.
Well, let's move on to the NBA draft. The Bulls have had some great success getting players late in the first round with, you know, Taj Gibson,
Jimmy Butler,
and even – Norris Cole.
Too soon.
I noticed you guys didn't put Marcus Teague in there.
Well, you know what?
TBD. It's still not too early to determine.
We'll definitely have some questions about Marcus Teague, but what do you think the Bulls are looking at right now at 20? I know you've written a couple articles on the situation. So for our listeners that haven't got a chance to check that out, what are the Bulls looking at 20?
Well, obviously, when you're at 20, you can't drive the draft. But I do think that, I mean, their main two needs that they want to address, and the best time to do it is in the draft, are, you know, big man depth and shooting. And I just think this is, I'm guessing here, but I just think that this is the kind of draft where you've got enough potentially strong rotation big men players that I do think they're going to go with size and a big man at 20. You know, there's a chance that they could draft a European player and stash him overseas like they did with Mirotić because of their financial situation. But if they do pick somebody that's going to be in camp and on the roster, I do think it's going to be a big man.
Okay, so the guys the Bulls may be looking at are who? Are they looking at Withy from Kansas? Are they looking at Deng from Louisville? Are there any other guys that maybe Bulls fans should be looking at in the next couple of days?
They to do our research, get acclimated.
Yeah, if
well, Plumlee, I guess, is projected to be there, right, from Duke. I mean, I don't know where the Bulls feel. I mean, they don't acknowledge anything about the draft anymore. Gar Foreman has closed draft workouts to the media. He doesn't even have pre-draft availability. I mean, he's become more Klandenstein and Jerry Krause about the draft. So
I was about to say that was reminiscent of Jerry Krause's.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Krause used to open the draft workouts. He just wouldn't, you know, talk to you about anybody. But we could talk to the players. I mean, they've had all these guys through there. So, I mean, where they rank on the Bulls board, I have no idea. I know that they've had all those guys in. I know they've scouted all these guys extensively. But I do think that, you know, there's enough quality big men in this draft that when you get to 20, I think one of those guys will be on the board, and I think that's the way they're going to go. I think, you know, they lost Oshik. Muhammad is a, you know, fifth big, you know, security blanket type guy. And just given Noah's foot issues and the way they like to play with big man depth, I just think that's the way they're going to go.
Now, taking a step outside of the Bulls world, at the top of the draft, this is, for me, this is one of the more interesting drafts in the last couple of years because you don't have a solid number one.
Right.
Who do you see going number one? Do you think there's a possibility that Cleveland may, you know, trade out of that position to get maybe some free agent help or, excuse me, some more veteran help? What do you see happening with that?
Well, I think you just nailed it. Because there's no consensus number one, I don't think you can predict what's going to happen. I think that the fact that they're even considering trading, it shows you how this draft is. I mean, it's not a dominant draft. So you've got Dallas trying to trade its lottery pick. I mean, you've got people that are, you know, going a lot of different ways. So, I mean, I couldn't even guess who Cleveland's going to take or what they're going to do because it's just not a strong draft. I mean, everybody knows the names that are projected to be near the top that are you know, possible to be picked there. But I don't think there's any way you can predict what's going to happen because it's such a non-dominant draft. And it's really just a draft based on potential at this point.
Yeah, you mentioned the approach that the Bulls took a few drafts ago with Nikolai Mirotic, stashing him overseas. And so far, he's created a lot of buzz here in Chicago. Obviously, most recently, I should say, he won the ACB League title with his Real Madrid team. For Bulls fans, is Mirotic the real deal? Should we start believing the hype?
Depends on who you talk to. I mean, obviously, until he gets here and proves he can do it at this level, you don't know. You know, I've heard him compared. I've never seen him play in person. I've just watched the highlights like everybody else. Sam Smith, my former colleague at the Tribune and obviously writes for Bulls.com, did go see him play when in the preseason last year when they played, I think, in Memphis and Toronto. You know, he thought he was decent, but I mean, again, you can't project until he gets to this league. Mm-hmm. I've heard him compared from everybody from Dirk Nowitzki to Andrea Bargnani. So there's quite a bit of a gap in between there. The Bulls better hope he's closer to Nowitzki than Bargnani. But he's a shooter, stretch four. I obviously could fill a role, you know, particularly playing with Derrick Rose, but he's got to come to this level and prove he can guard and be strong enough and handle the rigors of an 82 game season. And, you know, quite frankly, it's, you know, there's still a chance he's not going to come over. I mean, I know he said he wants to come over. And I know that, you know, the Bulls are prepared to buy him out at some point, but you know, those contract negotiations can sometimes take surprising turns. So I'm not saying that's a high probability, but that's something you got to consider as well. So,
right.
You know, I'd like to see him over here for the 14-15 season. I think that'd be a good addition. Next summer, and you know, we'll see what happens with that story.
Another thing that, you know, Bulls fans could look forward to this summer is Taj Gibson and Tom Thibodeau's involvement with Team USA, which I think could be very beneficial to both coach and players' development. What are your thoughts on that, and how do you see both players benefiting from the experience this summer, or I should say Tibbs and Taj benefiting this summer?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I can just tell you that I've been lucky enough to be around the last two Olympics, Beijing and London. I actually was not covering men's basketball exclusively. I did cover some of it. And so I've been around that program a little bit. And I can just tell you that since Colangelo and Krzyzewski have been around, it's been obviously nothing but first class and wonderfully run and really, really serious commitments from a wide variety of stars. So obviously when you've got that level of excellence and commitment, anything associated with it is going to benefit from it. Derek benefited from it, you know, playing in the world championship team, you know, in Turkey. And, And Taj, this is going to be his second straight summer. I mean, he was on the select team last summer, practicing against the Olympic team before they went to London. And, you know, this year it's going to be more of a mini camp type thing. So that's just, you know, wonderful for Taj. And then Tom, you know, quite frankly, I'm kind of kicking myself that I didn't try to think of that story and try to break it first. I mean, it just makes total sense. I mean, you know, you got a guy that in Krzyzewski who's looking for, you know, serious and committed assistance. And I mean, we all know Tom basically lives and breathes basketball. And I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for him. He's clearly earned it. And I think it's just going to, I mean, he's already got a ton of respect around the league. I mean, anytime you've got Kobe Bryant as one of your main advocates, he's known Kobe since Kobe was a teenager in Philadelphia. But, I mean, Tom's going to get to know, you know, all these guys on a far more intimate and committed level. And I think that can just benefit him not only as a coach but as a person as well.
Yeah, personally, I'm just hoping that this gives Bulls ample opportunity to make some recruiting pitches while working with all these, you know, up-and-coming star players.
So you're looking for a big three to come out of Rio, is what you're saying?
Basically.
What is Todd Gibson looking at, and what is Tom Thibodeau looking at? What do they actually do? I don't think a lot of fans really understand that, since there are no, you know, games or anything of that nature.
You mean like at this summer's camp?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, that'll be, you know, it's a mini camp. So, I mean, Tom's just going to be an assistant there, but it's a USA basketball mini camp, and it's basically to get guys that are not part of the senior team, you know, in the pipeline. So, you know, you got some of your younger stars. Kyrie Irving's going to be there. John Wall's going to be there. You know, multiple people are going to be there. It's just getting them into the USA basketball pipeline, you know, to keep it at a high level and to keep it competitive. I mean, none of these guys will be, I doubt many of these guys will be on the senior team that will be going to Rio, but you never know. But I mean, it's just, again, it's just great experience. I mean, this year it's not going to be practices against the senior team, you know, the Kobe's and the LeBron's. Those guys have no commitments this summer. It's more just a mini camp. So it's going to be 3 or 4 days of drills out in Vegas, you know, with Krzyzewski and Tom and the staff and Colangelo, and just, you know, giving them a taste of USA basketball and what the expectations are and what the system is and what they run and all that stuff. So it's just great experience for Taj.
And to align the stars for the 2014 plan.
There you go.
Well, we want to get to the last topic, which is probably the biggest topic of this past season and also going
Derrick Rose.
You nailed it. You nailed it. Tibbs was recently quoted in a report that Rose is back to himself and now showcasing the same explosiveness. What can you tell us about that? And also, more specifically, Rose's summer plans.
Well, I mean, Rose's summer plans are going to be the same as they typically are. You know, he's actually stayed longer in Chicago than usual. I don't, as of last week, he was in Chicago. I don't know if he's in Chicago or LA this coming week. I also know he's got some overseas Adidas commitments coming up, you know, just exhibition stuff where, you know, he gets on the court and runs some clinics and drills and pushes product overseas.
Hashtag the return part two.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. how ill-timed was that, the advertising campaign nickname, you know? but, you know, it's going to be a typical summer for Derek. He doesn't play in a lot of games. He's a drill guy. He's a workout guy. He's not a full court guy in the off season. And, you know, even though he didn't play in a game last season, he said the last time that I talked to him, he said that wasn't going to change this summer. So, you know, he's been working out at the Berto Center. And as you mentioned, Tom said he's been looking good, but again, these are just drills. And until he plays in a game, there's going to be question marks, you know, surrounding his situation. I mean, everybody you talk to that has seen him play said that, you know, they expect him to return at a high level. Obviously by next training camp, the knee is not going to be an issue whether or not it's ready. It's just he's got to go through the rigors of training camp and playing in games and all that stuff. So I expect him to play at a high level, and I expect him to be ready for training camp, and hopefully this story will fade into the distance at some point.
So Bulls fans should be marking down on their calendars October 12th, I believe, which is their first preseason game in Rio?
I don't know if that's set as the first. It might be. They haven't released a full preseason schedule. they went to London in 09. I can't remember if that was the first game or not. Typically, those overseas games are the first games. But, yeah, if that's the first game, then I get a free trip to Rio, right? Because I got to be there for Derek's first game.
Hey,
if you
need some company, if you got an extra pair of plane tickets, we're available.
All right, I'll run that by my boss.
The relationship between Derrick Rose and the players has seemed to be strong on the outside. A number of players have come out in support, especially Luol Deng and Joakim Noah. Do you think that is basically the case, that there was really no pressure with the players of Derrick Rose coming back, that they understood the process?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Luol gave the most impassioned defense of Derrick publicly of anybody, obviously, because he'd gone through the situation with his, you know, second time I've mentioned this, the stress fracture in his tibia when he was questioned, and he ended up being right. So, you know, look, players have each other's backs. I mean, I multiple times this season I saw Derrick being stopped in the hallway by a visiting player, and, you know, they give each other the hug and catch up, and you know, you hear them say, "Hey, take your time, man. Do what you got to do. What's best for you." I mean, it's a fraternity, and players have each other's back. You know, obviously that story took another crazy turn during the playoffs because you had guys like Noah and Heinrich and you know, Nate Robinson throwing up at the bench and playing. So people are trying to contrast it with Derrick. I mean, I'm not diminishing anything what those guys did. What they played through and the commitment they gave was fantastic. But none of those guys were dealing with a, you know, potentially career-ending or career-threatening injury. I mean, I know people come back from ACLs all the time, but it's still a serious, serious injury. So Derrick and his, you know, and his support staff made a strategic decision to sit out the year, and I know he took a lot of heat for it, but he was comfortable with that decision throughout, and he's as beloved a teammate as I've seen in covering this franchise for as long as I have, because they know that he's genuine, humble, and all about the team. He's as selfless and as egoless of a star as I've been around, so everybody supported him, everybody had his back, and like I said, hopefully come training camp, this story will fade into the distance.
And I'm hoping for it, too. Just one more question on that. It seems as if the relationship between the players and Rose is good. What about Rose and the management? There seem to be some kind of weird things going on, especially in the All-Star break with Reggie Rose. Does that relationship seem to be repaired? Was there any damage at all? What can you tell the fans about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Reggie made those comments, and there's no denying that they were very strong and critical of management. I can just tell you that management was surprised by those comments, caught off guard by those comments, and all I can tell you is that when management and Rose's camp talk, it's always professional, it's always cordial. If there's a rift forming between those two sides, which is certainly a possibility, it's been kept quiet and beneath the surface. I'll tell you this, though. At the end of the day, it comes down to this. Both Rose and his people and Bulls management have the exact same goal, and that's to win a championship. Now, do I think that there's pressure on Bulls management to win a title on this extension become a perennial title contender as Derrick plays on this maximum contract extension? Absolutely. And I'm not saying that Derrick's definitely going to leave after this contract extension. I'm just telling you that Derrick wants to win a championship very, very badly. And, you know, obviously he's been part of a championship contender thus far throughout his Bulls career, because obviously he was part of those 500 teams. But he's been a part of a championship contender recently until he tore his ACL. That's got to continue, I would think, because that Derrick is about one thing, and that's about winning, and he wants to win championships badly. Bulls have the same goals, so you'd like to think that they're going to find common ground and work this out. So at the end of the day, if you win, you know, it's all going to work out. If you don't, you know, I think Derrick, like a lot of people, would then survey his options at the end of his contract extension.
Well, that's a little disconcerting. We're now a little bit worried.
But the last time Derrick played, they were a championship contender, right? Right before he snapped his ACL, they were the number one seed, right? Going Absolutely. Against Philadelphia, yeah. Right? So, I mean, they were in the conference finals one year with Derrick. They were, you know, and on paper, they were headed back to a rematch with the Heat when he tore his ACL. So, I mean, I would assume that they're going to become a championship contender when Derrick returns again. I mean, that's just how good of a player he is and how committed this organization is to winning. So, again, I think at the end of the day, they find common ground. They become a perennial championship contender because that's what this organization's about, and that's what Derek's about.
You think Reggie Rose speaks for Derek Rose's camp?
What's that?
Do you think Reggie Rose speaks for Derek Rose's camp?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, he's his brother's manager. I mean, I mean, Reggie speaks for himself. Reggie's his own person. Derek's his own person. I'm just saying that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's his brother's manager. So I think that Derek, let's just put it this way. Reggie's comments were very, very strong and critical. I don't think Derek would say that. But Reggie's the basis of Reggie's comments were win a championship. And that's what Derek's about, and that's what the Bulls are about. So, hey, the pressure's on everybody. You got to win. That's what this business is all about, and everybody in this equation understands that.
Yeah, well, with a full bill of health, I think that us Bulls fans should be pretty optimistic going into next season.
We'll see.
Yep, definitely. Well, Casey, we appreciate your time and insight. Thank you so much for coming on. We really enjoy reading your stuff at the Tribune. Hope you have a great summer, and maybe we can get you back on during the season.
Casey J. Hoop on Twitter.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, have a good one.
See ya.
All right, guys, thank you guys so much for sticking around. That was the one and only Casey Johnson, Bulls beat writer extraordinaire. I thought we got some really interesting stuff out of the interview.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of insight, a lot of good predictions, I guess, for the upcoming offseason. What was your biggest takeaway from the stuff that he provided?
Well, I think the end of the interview was really interesting, talking about how the Bulls – well, Rose's kind of team really expects a winner in this next extension, and he's going to be, you know, looking for a winner. You definitely don't want to, you know, draw too many, you know, lines or draw too many conclusions or go too far, but it was just interesting to hear the insinuation of certain things.
Yeah, when you started talking, I looked over at you, and you looked like someone just shot your dog. I mean, you were definitely very concerned. I thought that was a little bit reading too much into the comments. Mm-hmm. I'm not that concerned. And basically with Casey saying, look, Derrick Rose wants to win, I think that's stating the obvious.
But Derrick Rose, if you say Derrick Rose wants to win with the Bulls, mm-hmm. as opposed to Derrick Rose just wants to win, those are two different things, right?
Right.
I mean, right. Especially for Bulls fans, because mm-hmm. one includes the Bulls and one doesn't. But I don't want to act like Casey Johnson said that. It's just, I thought it was interesting to even think about that possibility.
I just don't think it's something that we should be concerned about right now for a couple of reasons. One, it's such a long time until Derrick Rose's contract runs out. I think a lot can change between now and I think he's signed through 2016, 2017. And then on top of that, the Bulls are pretty well positioned here going forward. I know that there's some doom and gloom with, you know, the salary cap restrictions, but you look at our top 7-8 guys, you assume a clean bill of health. We also have some flexibility when it comes to obviously the dreaded 2014 plan, but we also have assets in Nikola Mirotic, the 2016 unprotected pick from Charlotte, Jimmy Butler's emergence. You know, there's a lot of reason to be optimistic going forward, and to say that Derrick Rose wants to win, I think he has a good shot as any with the Bulls than any other team down the road. So I'm pretty excited about our chances going into next season and the future.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about Thursday. I don't know if you know this, but I'm a huge draft head. I love the NBA draft. The Bulls have been very successful, as I said in the Casey Johnson interview. So I'm really excited to see what the Bulls are going to do. And even what's going to happen with the rest of the NBA. This is like the first time ever that there's not a consensus number one. I think there are going to be a lot of very interesting trades that affects the NBA landscape. Mm-hmm. You're going to see some really interesting things happen that may not have to do with just the Bulls, but affect the teams around the Bulls.
Have you been doing your draft research?
A little bit. Yeah. I'm gonna get into it.
Do you have anyone predicted as of now who the Bulls will pick up?
It's tough because it really just depends upon what they're so far down. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the 20th pick. I agree with Casey Johnson. I think the Bulls are going to go with the big man. They really only have two needs, you know, a swing man who can shoot the ball. I think they're going to be looking for a shooter, and they're going to be looking for a big man, a number four. So there's some interesting names, Deang, Withy, the kid out of Duke. I think they'll probably go with one of those three guys.
Yeah, you know,
if available.
Along those same lines, for lack of a better term, it's going to be a pretty dull offseason.
Well,
In my opinion. And here's
why. Are you talking about with the Bulls or with the NBA?
With the Bulls.
Okay.
With the Bulls. And the reason why I say this is when you look back at the last three offseasons. 2010, we had the free agency bonanza, which culminated in the decision. 2011, we had the lockout and whether we were going to even have a season. And in 2012, there was a lot of uncertainty surrounding Rose's health and what the Bulls were going to do. Obviously, we saw the dismantling of the bench mob. Summer 2013, I'm pretty excited about its potential dullness in that there shouldn't be anything going on. We should know what to expect going into next season, at least when it comes to the roster. And I think we, like I said, we have as good of a shot as any other team to compete with the Heat and prevent them from three-peating. And, you know, you mentioned it during an interview with KC. You feel pretty good about the Bulls' chances of going into next season, especially what we've seen from the Spurs and Heat, that this gap between the Heat and the rest of the league isn't that wide.
Yeah, I mean, before the season and before the playoffs, I really thought that the Heat were a dominant team that really couldn't be dealt with any other team in the league. I think we saw in the Indiana series and the San Antonio series, that was wrong. They went to seven games. They struggled. They definitely could have lost both series if not for a couple of fortunate bounces. And I suspect that the Bulls at full strength are better than both those San Antonio and Indiana teams.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you feel good. The Bulls have already played the Heat tough. In the regular season, even tough in the postseason. You know, both times were five games, but tougher than that sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm excited, and I think the Bulls definitely have a better chance to dethrone the Heat than I did. You know, throughout the whole time we've had the so quote unquote big three.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more in terms of the Pacers and Spurs being great litmus tests for the Bulls, assuming they're healthy. I mean, that's pretty much the only concern when it comes to the Bulls' chances going forward. You know, you look at the Pacers, and their biggest strength was their inside play with Roy Hibbert and David West. The Bulls, while they're not as offensively dominant in the paint as a Hibbert and West with Boozer and Joe Kim, you know, they still present the same advantages over the Heat with their offensive rebounding and interior defense. And then you look at the Spurs, a well-coached team that's pretty much run by their elite point guard in Tony Parker, in my opinion. You know, if we get a healthy Derrick Rose, a Derrick Rose of a 2010 MVP caliber, then we should be primed for a successful run against the Heat.
And I actually heard that Derrick Rose gained 6 inches on its vertical leap. So
yeah, you heard it here first.
Yeah,
like breaking news.
he can dunk on a 12-foot rim now.
So what else is or do we need to look forward to this offseason? We talked about the draft. Probably aren't going to be too many moves made by the Bulls this offseason. I want to still crank out episodes, you know? I mean, we're back in the saddle. We're ready to continue our Bulls show presence. What are we going to talk about?
I don't know, man. I got nothing for you.
I ask the tough questions. I expect you to.
I don't know. I mean, the Bulls have done a good job in finding, you know, minimum level players, mm-hmm. and turning those players into production guys. You know, C.J. Watson, Kyle Korver, Ronnie Brewer,
Nate Robinson,
Marco Bellinelli. So, you know, they're going to make a couple small moves, but those guys will probably end up playing, you know, 30, 35 minutes a game. So, depending on how things shake out. So, and you know, the Bulls could, I mean, although they are restricted in their ability to sign players as free agents, you know, nothing's stopping them from making trades. And, you know, they do have the contracts to make a trade. So who knows?
Draft's on Thursday. We'll see what the Bulls do with the 20th pick. Till then, my name is Nils. My partner in crime here, Mitch.
What's up?
We'll see you next week. Bull Show.
Bull Show.